Okay, I'm opening today's session of the House Revenue Committee. In attendance, we have Representative Juan, Representative Gelser, myself, Representative Benz, Representative Reed, and on the phone, if you check with me, I have Representative Bear Brewer. Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm here.
Representative Barnhart?
Yes, ma'am.
And Representative Jules Bailey?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you very much. I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 301A. And Chris, would you please kind of put us in the loop here?
Hey, good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. In your packet, you should have a copy of the bill, 301A, a copy of the revenue impact statement, draft SMS, and fiscal impact. And the fiscal impact is a no impact. And the revenue impact shows a $15.4 million revenue loss for 09-11. That's due to tax year 2010 provisions that we'll go over in a minute. And then in 11-13, a $1.5 million revenue hit. So altogether, a $16.9 million revenue loss. You also have in your packet a sheet entitled SB 301A Summary. So just to hit the main points of the bill, what it generally does is update the date of Oregon's date of connection to federal law from December 31st, 2009 to December 31st, 2010. And that was identical language to the bill that you heard a couple weeks ago, House Bill 2535. The difference is in the A version and the amendment, which I'll get to in a second. The bill does not make changes to the rolling reconnect, which got reinstated January 1st, 2011. But what the bill also does, and this is how it got the A on the Senate side, it does not adopt, in moving the tie date up to December 31st, 2010, it does not adopt the expanded depreciation and Section 179 expenses adopted for tax year 2010 only. And that was, so for 2010, we have the regular depreciation and Section 179 expensing. Taxpayers are still allowed depreciation and expensing. It's just not the bonus depreciation and the higher levels of expensing for 2010. That's what that disconnect does. Again, as part of the rolling reconnect, we are tied to the 100% and 50% bonus depreciation and the higher Section 179 for tax years 11 and 12. It doesn't touch that. And the rest of estimated revenue impacts are, as I indicated, $15.4 million for 09-11 and $1.5 million for 11-13. And in terms of the revenue impact, the key provisions, the provisions that make up most of that revenue impact, the largest item is the tuition expenses. This is an above-the-line deduction that taxpayers get, and that's about $10 million. And then you get down to provisions where the earned income credit is about $1.3 million, and then the health care for young adults is about $1 million. And then you get to a variety of items that are less than $1 million, and the two that are listed there are a 15-year depreciation item for restaurants and leasehold equipment, and then teacher classroom expenses. And then there are a number of other provisions that together make up about a $3 million revenue loss. But I put them in order of descending. I just didn't list them all in there. You get to a lot of little provisions. So that's basically what it does. Would you like me to refer to any?
Well, let's find out what the committee questions from the committee members.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Phil Barnhart. I would like to ask Chris to, if he could point in the bill to the sections that refer to the 179 and the other provisions about depreciation and expense.
Sure. On page 29 of the bill, section 30 is the add back. Give people a second to get to that page. And so what it is in Section 30, subsection 1, is the bonus depreciation. That is the Section 168. So as the language, it says there shall be added to federal taxable income for Oregon purposes the difference between two numbers. And it would be the amount allowed for bonus depreciation, the Section 168, as applicable for the taxpayer, and the amount allowed as a deduction under Section 168 for the tax code in effect on December 31st, 2009, and compared to what taxpayers got in 2009. So if you go back to December 31st, 2009, so we step back to that date, and what was the depreciation that taxpayers were allowed for tax year 2010? And if we go back to that date, there was no bonus depreciation in the code for tax year 2010. So we take that amount and compare that to the 09 number, and that's how they're adding back. And this is the identical language, except for the dates, that was in House Bill 2078 that was passed in the 09 session at the end, and it was used to disconnect for the bonus depreciation for tax year 2009. The dates are different. It's just shifted a year.
Now, what I don't understand, the last phrase is, and is applicable to tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2009 and before January 1, 2010. What does that phrase mean? It looks like it applies to the wrong year.
We've had a lot of discussions about this. I have with Department of Revenue and Ledge Council, and we're expecting Ledge Council to get here.
We'll ask them.
By 9:30 or so.
Yeah, I mean, as I read the bill, Madam Chair, that was that phrase in subsection 1, subsection 2, and subsection 3 of section 30 were the ones that had me mightily confused, so I'm very glad to have Ledge Council come and explain it. Also, the same language appears in section 32.
Section 30 is, I believe, for the...
32.
Yeah, section 30 and section 32 are identical. Section 30 refers to the personal income tax, so those would be
right.
The business, the pastor entities, and chapter 317 for section 32 are the corporations. So subsection 1 is the bonus depreciation, and then subsection 2 is the section 179, and then subsection 3 is basically they're not allowed the bonus depreciation or the higher expensing in the first year. They're then, to even things up, they get an additional subtraction in later years, again, as compared to federal law, because the federal law moves these things up, and Oregon law says, well, you don't get to move them up. You still get the full deduction. It's just in later years.
You have further questions, Rep. Barnhart?
Yeah, thank you. That's very helpful.
For those on the phone, we are waiting for Ledge Council. There's been some timing issues here. So we're going to continue this public hearing, and then we may recess for a few minutes to wait for Ledge Council to get here, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you.
So you're wondering what's going on. Representative Wan, you have a question.
Yes, question for staff. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The accelerated depreciation that the federal government offered, am I correct in understanding that the stated policy objective was to encourage business investment and expansion in depreciable items in the year 2009, and as kind of a carrot to encourage that type of activity, they were offering accelerated depreciation. Is that an accurate representation of what they were trying to achieve?
Representative Wan, I believe that was at the federal level, that was the stated policy purpose.
Okay, and the result of the state of Oregon disconnecting from that is that our businesses here don't get the same benefit on their Oregon tax return that they get on their federal tax return. Is that right?
That's correct. They will, for Oregon taxes, they don't get the extra depreciation. On the federal tax return, they'll still get that. They get that extra depreciation for their federal tax purposes. But for Oregon, they get the regular depreciation.
So if you're, if I may, Madam Co-Chair, sorry,
please.
Just a couple of follow-ups here. So if you're a business owner in Camas, you get the full benefit of the federal policy. But if you are the same business in Troutdale, you get the full benefit of the federal policy, but no benefit at all on your Oregon income tax. Is that an accurate statement?
They don't get the extra depreciation on the Oregon return. The tax structures are different. There's not a state income tax.
I understand that. But so one last question.
Yes.
So two similarly situated businesses, one in Washington, one in Oregon, in Washington, they're going to have a depreciation schedule on their federal tax return that reflects a policy suggesting that we wanted them to make an investment in the tax year 2009 to help stimulate the economy, and they get the full benefit of that accelerated depreciation. Mm-hmm. And a similar business in Oregon gets the full federal benefit, but with the Oregon income tax, we've basically said, we're not interested in following the same federal policy. You have to take your depreciation over 7.5, 15, 29, or whatever the original schedule was. Is that accurate?
Right. They would stick to the regular depreciation depending on the item. Right.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Brewer.
May I just speak to Representative Wan's statements?
Sure.
Just briefly, Representative Wan, a business that's operating in Washington State and not in Oregon State does not have we have two completely different state-level tax structures. So the impact of bonus and 179 depreciation to a Washington State-only company, there is no impact to them. They are, you know, their state tax equivalent is not on income but on business and opportunity tax. So when looking at the economics and competition between the businesses, this is not an apples and apples comparison or tax structure. This is an apples and not even a fruit basket kind of comparison.
Madam Chair, I've heard Mr. Chandler often talk about apples and giraffes.
Apples and giraffes.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for clarifying that.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Brewer. Anything else from committee members? Questions of staff? We have one person signed up to testify. Oh, did I see a hand go up? No. John? Mullen?
Good morning, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. For the record, John Mullen. I'm here as the co-chair of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon Tax and Revenue Committee. We have some very simple testimony today, which we're passing out, which mirrors the testimony that we gave on the Senate side. Without getting into the testimony specifics, other than to mention that the tuition provisions is also something that we added about concern about the reconnect. Just would basically say that our ongoing discussion throughout the session is going to be how we are going to balance the budget for 11-13. And I really very much appreciate the fact that there have been lots of thoughtful consideration here in the Revenue Committee and also on the Senate side about actions that may be taken by the Revenue Committees that could be beneficial to the overall budget, as well as selectively what investments that you choose to make with either not connecting or making decisions about various tax expenditures. Just for what this is worth, kind of comment, on the budget side, in the temporary assistance for needy families, we're eliminating the Parents as Scholars program, which allows about 266 individuals that have a really good shot at completing the degree, the opportunity to do so. That program will be eliminated. So as we look at some things that are not really equivalent, but discussion about who should be have opportunities to go to college, there are many things to be put into consideration. So again, I just want to say I think there's been lots of thoughtful consideration by this committee, also by the Senate committee, and recognizing that this is not a simple issue about figuring out where to make the kinds of investments that you're looking at and how to figure out how we're going to balance the budget and get out of here. But I appreciate the opportunity to speak this morning.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for coming and bringing that testimony and highlighting for us that tax expenditures are expenditures, just our general fund expenditures. I'll be supporting this bill today with a great deal of discomfort and will be reserving my right to change my vote later. But in my mind, part of the way that we get to this is that we will have the opportunity to make up for some of it in the Tax Credits Committee, looking at what we are doing in terms of tax expenditures. However we run that out, whether it's through a reconnect or through really tightening down the hatches on what we're giving back in those tax expenditures, we're going to need to do that in the same way that we're looking at general fund expenditures.
Thank you.
Any further questions, Diane? Thank you, John. Thank you very much for coming. committee members, I think I am going to go into recess for a few minutes because we would like to have legislative counsel here to talk about this bill, answer any further questions. Yeah, and those of you who are on the phone who might have questions of counsel, or we would ask you to hang on for a few minutes. We expect Ledge Council at 9:30, and we're worried about losing you. So if you'd indulge just hanging on for a few more minutes, we're going to go into recess. Is everyone here on the phone?
I'm here.
Appel's here.
Rep. Bailey? We've lost Rep. Bailey, but we will proceed. I'm going to come out of recess, go back into regular session, and we are still in a public hearing on this bill, and I'm going to ask our legislative counsel, Dexter Johnson, who is in the room, to come forward and answer any questions from the committee about the writing of this bill and the wording. We're waiting on Dexter. And he's reading it.
Good thing we came back together, man.
Yeah, sure. Good thing.
Did they hear you?
I think I'm going to ask staff if maybe we need to go back into recess for a few minutes. I think we are going to recess for a few more minutes, members of the Okay, I am. We are back reconvening the Revenue Committee for today, and I presume we still have Representative Bear Brewer and Representative Barnhart on the phone.
I am here.
I'm here.
Okay. We now have Dexter Johnson in the chair, and he is available to answer questions or discuss in any way the language of the bill with you. Questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm interested in the answer to the question I tried to ask Chris earlier about Section 30, where it looks like we've added surplus language at the end of each of those three paragraphs. The language that I'm referring to let's see, what page is it on? Page 29, lines 21 and 22, 26 and 27, and 32 and 33. It appears, just reading it, that it applies, that it indicates that this applies to the wrong year. But I'm perfectly happy to, I'd love to have the sentence parsed so I can understand that it doesn't.
Madam Chair, members, Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council, and Representative Barnhart, so I understand what you're asking about is the, for example, in subsection 1, the language beginning section 168K of the Internal Revenue Code as amended and in effect on December 31, 2009, and it is applicable to tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2009, and before January 1, 2010. And the effect of that is that there is, for the 2009 tax year, a special add back for
I think you can see my problem.
It's actually for you have to read this in light of section 33, which is makes this applicable just for the 2010 tax year. That there's a special add back of differences between the Internal Revenue Code as you have connected to it in Section 28 of the bill and as it was before that. So my understanding is at some point after January 1, 2010, Congress made a change that increased depreciation deductions. And
if I could interrupt, Madam Chair.
Yes.
I think I understand it now. That it appears to me that the last phrase I was concerned about actually is a descriptor of the amount that is subtracted from the amount that's subtracted from, and it modifies the language immediately above it. If I parsed the sentence correctly,
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, that is correct, except that it's an add back. It's not a subtraction, but
it's an add back. Yes,
yeah.
Thank you.
But you're basically comparing a number that you would get for depreciation under law in effect between December 31, 2009,
January 1, 2009.
Yeah, that January 1, 2009, and as connected after January 1, 2010.
Yes.
Right, and that's based on Section 33. So you have to read those two sections together, don't you?
You do have to read Section 33 and also the general connection date, which is in Section 28. You have to take all of those things into account in reading this.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move to a different topic.
By all means.
If other members don't have other questions on this one.
Any further questions on this one? No. Please proceed.
Thank you. I'm concerned about the interest and penalties section. And I'm not sure this is the one that other people were worried about, but it appears to me, if I'm looking at page 28, lines 39 through 44, if I read that correctly, what I think it does is if I owe 50 cents of tax based on a change that this bill makes, and I'm late getting it paid, I don't have to pay any interest or penalties on any amount that I'm late on for the applicable years. Is that the way you read that, too?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, two things. First off, this is kind of standard language that goes in this connection. This Section 28 is really the substantive connection date provision that when you adopt a reconnect every session, this is the language that's in it that makes it a reconnect. And so this is standard. And the way this is that if there is a retroact as a result of the connection dates that you've set forth in subsections 1 and 2, if there is a retroactive application of federal law that results in a deficiency, this provision says that that deficiency, only that deficiency that is resulting from the retroactive application of the connection, there will be no interest or penalty for.
Well, that isn't what the, if I may, Madam Chair.
By all means.
That isn't what the language says. What it says is, if a deficiency is assessed, and the deficiency or any portion thereof is attributable to any retroactive treatment under this law, then any interest or penalties shall be canceled. I'm leaving out all the in-between language, but I think that's what the sentence says.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, I think we are saying the same thing.
I guess I'm bothered by the fact that we have a standard language that basically says if the effect of this bill it leads to a deficiency because of a retroactive application of a federal tax law, then you don't have to pay penalties or interest on anything you owe, because I think that is what this section says, unless I really misunderstood it.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, yes, I think that is what it says. It reflects a policy choice that the legislature has traditionally made with Reconnect bills, that it is unfair to charge penalty or interest when a taxpayer was complying with the law, and then the bill comes along and makes federal law retroactively applicable, and suddenly they are not only no longer in compliance and must pay tax, but under the other statutes, they would owe interest and penalty. So they were complying with the law, then this bill comes along, and they suddenly owe interest and penalty. And I think in the past, the Legislative Assembly has made a policy call that that's inappropriate to actually impose penalty and interest in those circumstances.
Yeah, could I follow up?
Yes.
I completely agree with what you just said. I mean, it would be unfair to ask a person to pay a penalty or interest on a tax they didn't know they owed because we changed the law after the fact. I completely agree with that, but I don't think that's what this says. I think what this says is it isn't, doesn't apply just to the deficiency. I mean, just to the deficiency that's attributable to a retroactive treatment, but to any deficiency.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, if you look at line 44, it says, with respect to the deficiency or portion thereof, and I think that modifies the phrase in line 39. It says, if a deficiency is assessed and the deficiency is attributable to retroactive treatment. So I
it doesn't say that, though. It says deficiency or any portion thereof.
Well, it says the deficiency, and the deficiency that is referenced is the one talked about in lines 39 and 40, which is the deficiency that arises as a result of retroactive treatment.
Okay. May I inquire further, Madam Chair?
By all means.
Thank you. In any event, the interpretation of the department, as you understand it, or maybe directed at Chris, is that this section, as it's standardly applied, does not apply to deficiencies other than ones that are directly attributable to a retroactive treatment under amendments made in the statute like this.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, this is Exter again, and yes, I think that is the way this statute
even though
works.
I still have problems with the language, if that's what it means, then I'm happier again. Could I continue on this line, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. There are several pieces of this statute, and I don't propose to make changes to it today, but I want to sort of raise the issues. One of our big problems last time with Measure 66 was that the way the bill was written, people did not have to make...
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Did not have to make payments on their taxes, even though they should have known that they needed to make a deposit on taxes until August 15 or October 15th, because of the way the language was written, and. I am hoping that we can tighten that up somehow. The statute went into effect in February of 2009. Establishing a date for a deposit to be made to pay the estimated taxes could have been put in that bill. That would have been much earlier than October 15th, and it would have reduced our problems trying to understand what the effects of the bill were. It's something to consider. Now, on this one, and this now I get to my question, this is probably for Chris, I think that the likelihood of this particular bill leading to a deficiency under 3A that we've just been talking about is pretty small, isn't it, because of the specific effect that the bill has?
I believe that's correct.
Great. Thank you. Madam Chair, I appreciate the indulgence, and I'm finished with my question.
Thank you, Dexter. Are there further questions for staff or Dexter while we are here? Okay, in that case, I am going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 301A and open a work session on Senate Bill 301A. Representative Bentz.
Madam Co-Chair, I move Senate Bill 301A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bentz moves Senate Bill 301A to the floor with a due pass recommendations. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Madam Chair, is it appropriate to have a discussion at this point?
If you'd like to discuss it further, I'd be happy to.
Thank you. I'm going to be voting yes on this with a great deal of reservation. I believe strongly that one of the problems that we have in our state is that we tend to look at tax policy and look at our businesses and we say, well, they can make this work. Well, this isn't such a bad deal for the business community. It's just a little bit of money. They can handle it. And what I've said in the city of Troutdale as a city councilor is that over the last 20 or so years, we've killed our businesses with a death of 1,000 cuts. And the reason why that's so important is because it's the business community that hires us. It's the business community that generates the income tax revenues that supports our programs. And it's the business community that allows us to have a middle class and a high quality of life. I live in a county that's ranked 198th out of 199 West Coast counties in economic growth over the past 12 years, Multnomah County. And quite frankly, it's disheartening to be here in Salem and have to compromise on accelerated depreciation that was passed by the federal government, intended to create jobs, and then to come down and have the state of Oregon disconnect from that. But at the end of the day, I know I can't carry the day for a full reconnect. And this bill reconnects the key portions that help the folks in my community. I think it's a minimum. I'd rather we reconnect with everything, but I can't get there. So I'm voting yes with reservations for those reasons. And hopefully we can get some other things done to create jobs so that we have a tax base to support the programs and services that are important to our state.
Thank you, Representative Juan. Are there any other members of the committee like to weigh in? And anyone on the phone?
I would just like, if I could, Madam Chair.
Representative Air Brewer.
Thank you. Respect of all the taxpayers out there and the tax preparers out there, this bill needs to pass with urgency just to provide certainty so that taxpayers can file their tax return and tax preparers know how to do their job here with the taxpayers coming in. So I do encourage expediency in this bill.
Thank you, Representative. Any further comments?
This is Jules Bailey. May I jump in?
By all means. We're glad you're back.
Thank you. I wanted to just echo some of the reservations that have been expressed about the bill and note that it is a compromise bill. I have some reservations in the other direction of deepening the budget crisis that this state faces with the revenue impact. However, there are some provisions of this bill that are important to working families and to struggling families. And while we in Oregon cannot print money like the federal government can and must be much more careful about our budget and our intake and our outflows, this bill does represent a compromise. I will be voting yes, but it will be with a good deal of reservation.
Thank you. Further comments? Carol, roll call vote, please.
Representative
Benz.
Aye.
Representative
Gelter. Aye.
Representative
Reed.
Aye.
Representative Juan.
Aye.
Vice Chair Bailey.
Aye.
Vice Chair Brewer.
Aye.
Co-Chair Berger.
Aye. The measure carries. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Yes. Carrier, Representative Barnhart, do you want to co-carry?
Yeah,
okay.
I think that's a good way to do it.
All right, Representative Barnhart and I will co-carry this bill. I believe it will be coming to a floor near you very soon. And with that, I close the work session on Senate Bill 301A, and we are... before I adjourn, we in light of uncertainties around weather, we will be moving our hearings on the bills before us tomorrow to the Monday. We have scheduled them for both Friday and Monday, but we are moving the hearings to Monday. So we basically have no business tomorrow that will compel us here.
So that means don't come?
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's what that means. So we are adjourned.
Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Madam.